is Ed Cochran from Burbank, California, and he's speaking in Monterey, California, July the 29th, 1961. This recording has been reproduced by the Northwest Tape Library by Jack Turpin of 2301 Union Street, Eureka, California, zip 95501.
And this gentleman that I met this morning at the airport came walking out of that plane with a big AA face on him, a smile, had on a big pair of Hollywood glasses. I don't know what he was hiding. He couldn't hide that AA face, so I don't know what he was trying to hide, the fog. He might have had fog lights on, I don't know. But anyway, I'm not going to take up any more of your time and turn it over to Ed C. from Los Angeles. Thank you. My name is Ed, and I'm a real grateful alcoholic.
Hello, Ed.
Miss, where you get off a plane, there can be 100 people there, and you can spot the alky every time. I don't know what it is. It's just that look, I guess. I'm not hurting anymore. Look, I guess that's what it is. But I'd like to preface anything I have to say here tonight by saying that it could possibly be during the evening that I may not say a thing up here to help a soul that's been in this room tonight, maybe new or a long, long time. But this is sort of a selfish deal, this Alcoholics Anonymous. Sort of like booze. You get out of it, I guess, just exactly to the extent what you put into it. And I always like to say that anybody that likes to ride back on that plane with me, you know, if you go to a meeting like this, you don't really need an airplane to go back on, because you're off the ground after the meeting's over with. So if I don't help a soul up here, I always like to say to every AA group that I get close to, whether I'm participating or not, don't you ever stop what you're doing for me. Because each and every day that I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous, I recognize that the word alcoholic is a privilege to say, because I'm the kind of a fellow that realizes now that all my life, prior to meeting you folks, people were calling me all kinds of terms like drunk and alcoholic and things like this when I wasn't. And now that I am, nobody believes it. And once in a while, somebody says, where the hell are you going? I said, well, I'm going so-and-so. What are you going up there for? Well, I'm an alcoholic. Oh, you're kidding, you know. In the old days, I used to say, oh, you're kidding, you know. But I think there's a difference in me knowing than them knowing. I would rather talk about it any time than to have to prove it all over again. But being an alcoholic is really a privilege. I don't know of any place else in the world that you can go and sit down. As I was sitting with Buck tonight, stuffing myself in one of those restaurants down there, I said, it's strange how we can all sit together and we don't have to kid one another about who we are. He says, we know who we are. We know, because we've all been there. And isn't it strange that it makes no difference? I remember what you said to me when I came to my first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. You said you didn't care what I'd taken or where I'd taken it, that you were only interested in one thing, whether I was interested in another way of life. And that's what I like being an alcoholic, because I think prior to meeting you, I had tried every imaginable remedy. And I used to think myself real unique, because for many, many years, I couldn't possibly be an alcoholic, because anyone knows that anyone that smokes marijuana is not an alcoholic. And I smoked that weed for years, and then I dropped them pills, you know. How can a pill dropper be an alcoholic? And when I did drink alcohol, I couldn't be an alcoholic because, you know, alcoholics drink wine, and I didn't drink wine. And when I drank wine, I couldn't be an alcoholic because I didn't drink Muscatel, you know. You know, isn't it a strange thing, the yardstick that I used all the time prior to meeting you folks, is that I think the definition of an alcoholic prior to meeting members of Alcoholics Anonymous is that an alcoholic is someone who has an alcoholic problem. Somebody else. Because I have strange situations happen to me many, many times now. I happen to go over once in a while to my mother or father's house over there. My mother's a social drinker. She drinks about a half case of beer and about a fifth of whiskey a day, you know, 65-year-old lady. And my father, too, they only have one problem, who's getting the most. And each one tells me they think the other one's drinking too much. You know, it's one of them kind of bits. Then I meet one of my sisters usually comes in, and she's got some romance under her arm, someone she's madly in love with. I don't know if you ever had that problem or not, but I did. I was in love a lot. But she's always got someone under her arm, and she always goes to introduce me. She says, this is the fellow that I'm going to marry. What'd you say your name was? And she's usually got a black eye or some little symbol of her way of life. But the weird part is that I'm the only alcoholic in the room. And I don't drink. So you see, it's a privilege to be an alcoholic. Because every once in a while, I'm sure there are many of you who've been down to Los Angeles, they have a place down there that have real barefoot AA, and it's called the Midnight Mission. And you can't get to the Midnight Mission without walking by yourself in every doorway. There you are, you know, all rolled up in a ball with a little 39 center. And every once in a while, just to be a little facetious, I'll walk up to one of these guys and say, you couldn't have an alcoholic problem, have you? And he'll say, no, but you'll find one around the corner. And this is why I like being an alcoholic. Because the first alcoholic I ever met that said he was an alcoholic, I couldn't figure out what he was proud of, you know. He was standing there before me with a bow tie on, and he had a clean shirt and immaculately combed hair and glasses and everything. He looks at me and shakes my hand and says, my name's Clyde, I'm an alcoholic. The only thing I could think of, what the hell are you so proud of? I always thought this was a stigma, because I can remember many, many times with my head this far down in the toilet bowl, I never had any problems. Who's going to become an alcoholic? I mean, how far can you go? I met a man who belonged to the bowl club. I guess there's a few other bowl club members in here, but I was an ardent prayer before I come to AA. I always had my head in the bowl talking to God. And I met a fellow one time that had the same problem as I. It seemed like he spent most of his life in his head in one of these bowls saying, oh, God, you know. And he said that he got so thin and he had his head in that thing so often that one of his friends told him that if he did it one more time, he'd get a free trip to San Pedro, you know. And you know, the thing I like about being an alcoholic is that when you get a chance many, many times to be with other alcoholics, you get a chance to look at your life for what really happens. You know, there's a tremendous difference I find out in what really happened in my life and what I thought happened, or what I used to tell people happened. Because a lot of times I used to balk at the word insanity in our program. I agree that maybe I drank a little bit and I took a little dope once in a while, but I surely wasn't crazy. And I get to thinking now, just the way that I looked when I was 20 years of age would have qualified me for any institution. Because I didn't look like anyone else. I guess someone said that people who have deep inferiority complexes have got to do something to prove to other people that they're different. Well, there's no doubt about it. When I was 20, I was different. Because I had enough hair for four people. And I had what was known commonly then as a duck's butt hairdo. And I used to wear coats down way below my knees and pants clear up to here. And I wore dark green glasses, Hollywood glasses, only I wore them at night, you know. And I never took them off. And the only thing I could think of was just getting comfortable. It's a term that Buck likes. And I think that AA Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me that comfort is not a fantasy, an illusion, that it is real. But the things that people like me do to get comfortable are amazing. Because at my first meeting, I spent a whole life giving up wives, going to jail, doing all these kind of things my way to get comfortable. But at my first meeting, I was not comfortable. And this kills me. Because the only thing I could think of in those days was to take about two or three blasts, as we used to call it, off a marijuana cigarette, put my hands in my pockets, and about the only thing that would move would be my balls. And I could stand all night and just watch the people go by. Tremendous. I never knew anything about discomfort or anything. It was just get up and spend a day with me. I know that's sickening, but it was enjoyable. And you know, I like to think that Alcoholics Anonymous has again taught me that what I, as an alcoholic, looked for all of his life, went to jail for, was willing to give his wife up for, was not an illusion. Because I really believe that anyone that spends his teens like I did with the feeling that everyone in the world is better looking and everyone has got more money and everyone's more intelligent must have some kind of an inferiority complex. And I think that the moment that a person like this transcends this, even though it only be synthetically, I think it's awful hard to believe that this does not exist. Because after I smoked marijuana, I want to tell anyone in the room that when I looked into a mirror, I saw the most handsome devil you ever want to look at. And I started putting that wave up in here, you know. And the funny part about it is that I weigh about 155 pounds, about 160, I was out with Buck tonight. But then I never weighed over 128 pounds in my life. And my face must have been about that long, you know. Sort of a John Carradine type. And I wore my hair exaggerated with a wave that I used to say was real. You knew it wasn't. I put it in there. And I'd look in a mirror and say to myself, aren't you handsome, you know? Well, this is insanity in itself. But again, I say, it's a tremendous experience that I can recall now being with the members of Alcoholics Anonymous that I had absolutely no feelings of inferiority. I could walk into a dance hall and I learned something. I used to go into these dance halls and I'd get these little gals out, and this one little gal in particular that I married, I used to take her and throw her out, do Lindy Hops between the legs, on both legs, and as a matter of fact, one night at the Palladium, they were playing something so fast, me and this little girl got to dancing, everybody stopped. Well, you know, for the person with my type personality, that, my God, they're all looking at me, you know? I'm the greatest thing since Fred Astaire, you know? And I'm doing all things like this. But after I got sober and went to an Alcoholics Anonymous dance, I learned something. I can't dance. So what was going on is beyond me. It's an amazing thing with narcotics, and I like the phrase that is used so commonly around Southern California. I'm sure it is up here. That regardless of how you get numb, you got numb, you know. And now I don't expect anyone, as I did when I first come in, to build me some special building because I got loaded through the nose. They have a little nose group for me, you know. Because again, I say, the only thing that you were ever interested in when I first came to my meetings was, what do you want to do about your life? And the only thing that you've ever talked about in your association with me is how to live a better way of life. And you know, again, I look back on my life and thinking some of the things that have happened in my life and some of the things that have been so significant to me. And one of the things that I remember so well is the fact that getting out at night, I used to go out at night and spend 4 and 5 and 6 hours in these places where these colored musicians were playing, and all night long, just go, 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 you know, all night long, nothing, and just about the time the sun would start to come up, all us cats would go back to our pads, you know. And this was my life, and this was my life up till about the time that I got a letter in the mail one time that said greetings from President Roosevelt. Well, oddly enough, they sent me to a place up here called Camp Roberts. That's a wonderful place for an alcoholic, because 128 pounds in a 40-pound field pack is just not comfortable. And they says, march. Well, the first thing I did when I got up there was make friends with people in the dispensaries, you know, because you can get them little things to get comfortable in, you know. All them different green ones and blue ones and black ones, and I'm the kind of a fellow that never went up to anyone and asked them if they had any authority for what they were carrying. If they had something that they had this look on their face that I love, you know, this one. This is my favorite expression. I didn't say, what is it? I just said, give me one, you know. And then after I took it, if I liked it, I'd say, hey, that's crazy, man. What is it? And then I found a new way to go, you know. I'd be comfortable. I love being comfortable. Just love it. And I spent 2.5 years at Camp Roberts in San Miguel and Paso Robles. And after I was sober about 4 years, I went back up to see what it looked like. I had no idea. There's something about living anesthetically that doesn't give you all the facts. As a matter of fact, every once in a while I'm so amazed, and my children are so amazed, that a man who, like myself, is 40 years of age can get so amazed at things. Because about a year ago, my wife and kids were going to Reno, you know, and it just snowed, and we were going up over the pass up there, and my kids in the back and my wife, and it was just beautiful, and the mountains and the glistening on the snow. And every once in a while, one of the kids would say, look at that. And I'd say, my goodness, look at this. Isn't that beautiful? Oh, my goodness. And this was ooh and aahing was going on over this trip. We were just looking like this. And I said to my wife, did you ever see anything so pretty? My wife nudged me. And she said, it's always been here. I'm the one that began to see these things. Because I never went anywhere. The only problem I had is that I never went anywhere where liquor stores were this far apart. I know a man that was sober 2 years in AA before he ever got out of the county. Like me, never could get any place because I had to make those little stops. But you know, I think that I've heard it said in Alcoholics Anonymous that this disease that I have, which is incurable, and I'm glad to find this out, that I'm not just an arrested case of a disease of alcoholism, is a sort of a disease that people like me never know they have it. You know, someone once said it's something like a chain that lays across one's chest that no one knows it's there until it's impossible to break. And I'm the kind of a fellow that for so many years found so many things that could make me comfortable. I guess that they say the obsession of the mind is that I know there's comfort and I got to find it. Leave me alone. I know it's out somewhere. As we were saying tonight, riding in the car, it made a difference where I was the last 2 or 3 years. Prior to meeting you, I was never in the right place. If I was in this bar, I should have been in that one. And if I went to that bar, I knew darn well I should have stayed in the one I was in. Because as we used to say in the language of the beatniks, or the hips, as we used to call ourselves in those days, we were always asking one another, what's happening? And I didn't know that I got sober what we meant. No one knew. Because, you know, when you're willing to give up everything, and I think that the alcoholic is the kind of personality who, by his very nature, is willing to go to any length. Because I never met a happy newcomer. Never have. It seems like everybody I've met has gone the gamut, one way or another. And this is what I like about alcoholics. I never meet anybody in AA who has to read Kinsey's report for experience. They've all been around. I think it's the most fabulous thing in the world to be a part of something so tremendous as this fellowship. I happen to be in a situation now that is a very difficult thing for me because all of my AA experience has always been one of tremendous activity. I've always felt that it's like booze. You get exactly, and I have friends in the audience here that go to road camps. You know, first thing you know, you're going here and you're going there, and it's all there is to do except just stay sober and carry the message. And they've got me on a job now where I have to work 4 or 5 nights a week. And you know, this is not good, because I find now that Alcoholics Anonymous is sort of a personal thing with a barometer. It's sort of like having a gas gauge on your automobile. Well, AA has taught me the easiest way to stay sober is to never get below 3/4 full, you know. Not wait till I'm like this and say, God, I better get to a meeting. The only difference is on the weekends now I make a smorgasbord out of this. And as a friend of mine who's a musician always says, he says, this is something that always stuck with me. I say to him, every time I go to a meeting, you're at a meeting. And he says, yeah, that's where I get my soul plasma. Just exactly. Because again, I say, if I don't do anything for anyone tonight, I say, by gosh, don't stop what you're doing for me. Because I'm the kind of a fellow that must, time to time, remember that my disease has been taught to me by the fellows that preceded me is not really alcohol at all. Never was. My problem is me. And I find out now that the greatest thing that I have is one thing, and that's the association with other people who realize that the things that happen to me happen to everyone. Because I was sober for quite a long time, about 6 months, and that's a long time to be sober. And I guess that I'm one of those kind of fellows that they used to call the perennial honeymoon because I never touched the ground. And one fellow asked me one time after I'd been sober about 6 months, he says, when are you ever coming down? And I said, well, I like it up here. This is the greatest thing that ever happened. But one day, all of a sudden, I find myself flat on the ground, and I didn't like it. 2 days went by, and I didn't like it. So the third day, I made one of those desperate runs down to my sponsor, and I run up to Jim, and I says, Jim, I says, there's something wrong. I says, I don't think this program's working. And he looked at me, and he got that grin that sponsors get. I don't know what it is, but they seem to look right through you. And he said, this is probably the first time you ever thought about working it. And it actually is true. I'm the kind of a fellow that only learned in the last year. I don't catch on like a lot of other people. It's taken me almost 10 years to learn that prayers are answered. I'm the kind of a fellow, ever since I've been here, you told me pray for things and they happen. I've been praying for strength. And only found out this year when you pray for strength, you get problems. So now I say, hey, take it easy. I don't want to get so strong so quick. And again, last year I was bemoaning the fact that in 1959, after being around the program almost 9 years at the time, I couldn't figure out why I wasn't driving one of them Cadillacs. You know, I'm sober. And I was telling my sponsor again, I was bemoaning the fact that I wasn't making any money. I said, this has been a terrible year for me financially. And again, that sponsor's grin that kills you. He looked at me and he says, you come into Alcoholics Anonymous and you stick around for maybe 8 or 9 or 10 years, he says, you'll become the most wealthy person in the universe. And he says, then maybe God will give you a couple of nickels. Boy, isn't it true. Don't you prove to me every time that if I truly be alcoholic, as I know that I am, that the only thing that I have ever been interested in my entire life, and again, you remind me of it again tonight, it's a different word now, it's attitude. In the old days, it used to be altitude. And I find out now that in the old days, whenever I was comfortable on weed, walking around the streets of Glendale or Burbank or Hollywood, wherever it was, it seemed like the whole world was just absolutely beautiful. And you know, every once in a while in this way of life, I find myself with attitudes that I do not like. And it always reminds me of the fellow who went to sleep on the couch and someone stuck Limburger cheese under his nose. And he roamed around the rest of the day telling everybody how the world stunk. The only difference is that you have taught me in something that I heard a little gal say down in one of the meetings over in Hollywood one night. She told a little story that sure pointed out exactly the problems that a person like me can have if I don't associate. She says there was a fellow one night got sick who ran the projector over at Grauman's Chinese Theater, and he went home, so they didn't have anyone. They asked one of the ushers if he'd like to run the projector. And he says, well, I don't know anything about it. The guy says, look, you just turn this switch and this switch here. If you have any real troubles, give me a ring on the phone. So the fella got the thing going like this. The only thing is the picture was all blurry. It didn't come up just right. So he didn't know what to do, so he ran down the aisle and he went clear up onto the stage and he kept moving the screen backwards and forwards. But the picture never got clear. So finally he got desperate and he got on the phone and he says, I just can't do a thing with that picture. He says, I've done everything. I've moved everything around. I've had the people move back. I've done everything. The fellow says, the problem is not up there. It's in the projector. And you know, this is sure the truth. I mean, this has been a real beautiful day for me because of only one thing. Because you have taught me again the thing that I needed to know. You have proved to me that all the things that I've done in my past were obviously worthwhile. To prove to me that good attitudes are something that I need. That I spent a whole lifetime looking for good attitudes. And I find out that in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, this is the one thing that I can have today. Because I think that I used to believe that if a man's been sober 10 years, he's really got something. Some poor little old guy around 3 months, you know. I went to a meeting one time about 6 months ago at North Hollywood, and this is one of them days, and I have a particular little disease that sneaks over me every once in a while. Maybe some of you have it too. But this is mine. It's self-pity. Any of you ever get this? But I get it up to the eyeballs. I caught her swimming it like a dog, you know. And I went to this meeting, and I didn't have my usual bubbling self. And I sat down, and there was a guy sitting alongside me, grinning from ear to ear, sort of a junior Chuck Chamberlain, you know. It bugged me. What's going on over here, you know? And is anything I hate being a paranoid-type personality is someone grinning when I'm not. Because I know they're grinning about me, see? So I asked this guy in a sort of a polite way, and I says, what are you grinning about? He says, isn't this a fabulous program? Well, that was a nutty thing to say. I've been here almost 10 years. He can tell me anything like that. I said, how long have you been on the program? You know, all these kind of deals. He says, 3 months. Isn't it terrific? Not to myself. Which one of you is sober? Not you. It's him. I never saw him on a bar stool in my life and said, I've been drunk for 6 months. How long have you been drunk? Don't mean anything. Not another thing. The only thing I ever have in life is what I used to get out of drugstores and liquor stores. How do I feel? Someone once quoted Emerson from a podium, and he says that Emerson's one who says that most people spend all their time preparing to live. Well, prior to meeting you, this is all I did. My wife would say, let's go to the show. And I says, I'll be ready in a minute, you know. I wasn't going to go before I got ready, you know. Who can dance or make love or do anything without first getting in condition? By the time I met you, I just didn't know how to get in condition anymore. Nothing worked. And this is, again, why I'm tickled to death to be an alcoholic. I think probably the most horrible thing that could possibly happen to a human being would be to take an alcoholic and take all of the things out of his life and make him comfortable and give him nothing in return. I think it'd be ridiculous. I think the greatest thing in the world to find out is that every once in a while, like I worked at a plant, I'd been around for 3 or 4 months, there used to be a little colored cat there. You know, it's kind of one of them drape cats and one of these kind, you know. And one day I was running around there just sailing all over the place, you know, just zooming like this. He walked up to me and says, Dad, why don't you give me some of that? He knew I was on something, but he couldn't figure out what it was. And I don't know what your impression of your first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, but I'll never forget mine. Because I walk in there and I go in full regalia. Boy, I got the drape hairdo, the dark wrap glasses, I got the drape coat on, you know, I'm going to go down and associate with these juice heads. And I get out there, and who's the speaker? Of all the people in the whole universe, it happened to be Bubbles, Chuck, you know. And I walk into this meeting that night, and everybody in there is the darnest thing I ever saw. Burbank was just jammed to the rafters, you know, with Charlie being there. And the first thing you know, I get in this place, and everybody's laughing about something. I don't know what they're laughing about. It bothers me. It's like they just told a story, but I wasn't let in on it. And then I got to notice there was an awful lot of men hugging men, you know, women hugging women. Well, we're kind of close to Hollywood, you know, so I didn't know what kind of a group I was in. But the darnest thing happened. I sat down, and then this guy, this Chuck, you know, who's 15 or 20 years my senior, you know, gets up there, and this guy laughs in places that you shouldn't laugh. And the tears get running down his eyes, and he gets to laughing, and you know me, I'm a pill head, I'm a weed head, I take stuff in the arm, I drink anything you offer me, you know, I'll go any way you want me to go. In the ear, if I thought it would work, you know. And I look up at this thing, and you know what I'm thinking with about a sixth grade education. What's this guy on? What's he taking? And the weird part is I looked around the room and I found out they were all on it. And then some darn fool made the mistake of saying, are there any alcoholics in the room, you know? I was the first one to get my hand up. The but only for one reason. I figured they'd cut me in, you know. And you know, that's been a tremendous thing for me, because up to this day, which has been almost 10 years, I wouldn't have cared if you'd have called yourself Yo-Yos at the first meeting. If you could have done to me what you have done to me, I'd have got up here tonight and said, my name's Eddie, I'm a Yo-Yo. It wouldn't make any difference. Because I know nothing, I can't even spell semantics, so I don't know anything about it. But the tremendous thing about it is the fact that I knew you were on something. And some of you are on it tonight, I can see that. And I like it. I think it's terrific. But the funny part about it is that it belongs to today. This is the part I like. I never smoked a marijuana cigarette for tomorrow. I never did. Never worked for me. Nor did I ever, in all my travels, ever find anything that I could get high on next Wednesday. Or could I find anything so terrific that would keep me up for days at a time? I always was subjected to doing humiliating things, like selling my coat or something like that. Waking up behind a billboard saying, where the devil am I, you know? I'm such a nice person who understands me. And I'm the kind of a fellow that remembers what I heard a man say here a couple of weeks ago. Someone says to him, but don't you have to give up an awful lot to become a member of Alcoholics Anonymous? He says, yeah, toilet bowls is one, jails, you know, my wife punching me in the mouth, and it's awful. This guy was the kind of a fellow that he used to get so paralyzed, his wife would tie him to the bed and then beat the hell out of him, you know? It's a horrible way to live it. But the thing that impresses me is that all of my experiences prior to meeting you, I was never an alcoholic. And I can remember experiences now that I shouldn't really remember, but I want to remember them because they really happened. And I don't think anything in the world is so memorable in my mind as laying around on your own floor for about 3 or 4 days. It's a nice way to live, you know. The only companion I had was a dog. And if you stay on the floor long enough with a dog, you seem to be able to communicate with them. They really talk. Dogs talk real good. And the only thing was, my dog used to look down at me, which is kind of humiliating. And also, my dog used to go outside to do what I was doing on the floor. Really? Seriously? But the time would come when Earl Flynn's double, that's me, would finally get off the floor. And then there was a liquor store about 4 blocks from my house, but it might just as well have been 40 miles, because there were two great dilemmas. One of them was I didn't have any money, and the other one was I was going to have to get a drink or die. And I like wine, don't you? There's something about it. Now, the reason I drank wine, I don't know if you ever told anybody this like I did, but the reason I drank wine is because it didn't tear up the stomach like whiskey. And the thing was that in the driveway, there'd be an automobile parked there. It was me with a driver's license in my pocket, but I don't know if you ever got this way or not, but your legs just go like this, and then there's a muscle that jumps in the neck. I don't know what it is. And the left eye was always full of glue. And I just didn't have courage to get in that automobile, and I'd start off down the street, but the funny feeling was that everybody in the whole neighborhood would put their shades up and say, there he goes. And I don't know what it is, but I walk into that liquor store, and I don't know what it is, but I just couldn't think. There were little things, like I finally rummaged up a few empty bottles and about 20 cents, maybe in pennies and dimes and nickels and things like this, in my pocket. And I walk into this liquor store, and for some strange reason, they seemed to pick on me. Because there wasn't the ordinary liquor store attendant there, but there was some psychiatrist who was just filling in while the guy went to lunch. Because he'd always have on horn-rimmed glasses, and he'd look down at me and say something like this. What do you have? You know, and I'm about to die. What I should have said, if I'd have had any self-honesty at all, I would have said to him, give me something to drink or you're going to have a corpse on the floor, you know? But not me. I don't even have a problem. You know, I'm the kind of a guy, even today, if I go to a gas station, I'm sure some of you do this, and for some strange reason I've only got 50 cents and I got to buy gas, I explain to the man why. You know? I still do it. You know, I want to just say, give me 50 cents worth of gas, but I got to tell him why I've only got 50 cents. So me not even having a drinking problem, although I'm like this, you know. I think my dog knew, the kids in the block knew, but there I'm standing. And I always told him, do you have any cold wine? We're having spaghetti for dinner tonight. Ridiculous. It's ridiculous, because I would wander out of there and get behind a billboard, which is not there anymore. They got a freeway there, thank God. You know, sort of my monument to social drinking. And behind that billboard, I would have my social drink. About 2 o'clock in the afternoon with warm wine. It's a wonderful experience. And even though I didn't have a drinking problem, I had enough experience to know that the first one wasn't going to stay down. And yet, every once in a while, those other people that don't understand this, you know, say that alcoholics don't have any guts. And if they get behind a billboard, me, in the old days, they wouldn't have any guts either. Because I knew before I took that first gulp, I knew what was going to happen. I was going to have a little ping pong game going down there. He says that he learned that somewhere in the book, he remembered them saying that if I truly be alcoholic and recognize the chaos of my life and that it isn't there anymore, then I am reprieved emotionally, mentally, for today, to be able to think, to be able to feel like a human being. And that if I recognize that I am reprieved, God owes me nothing. I owe God plenty. As a matter of fact, I heard it said just the other day, and it's strange, it means how long a man is around this fellowship, there's always something brand new. Meeting the other night by saying, what I am is God's gift to me, but what I become can be my gift to God. And you know, it's a pretty fabulous thing. I have never met anyone, and it's a strange fellowship because a lot of times I see a gal or a guy, and what's happening to my wife? Or once in a while, I look over on the couch and think to myself, why, it's a damn miracle. I just can't believe it. It's a miracle. And yet again, you have taught me that it's happening to me too. That if I will take a true evaluation and recognize that if sometime during this day, this 29th day of July, 1961, if I close my eyes and look on the inside, and if I recognize any bits of gratitude that may be there, if I can recognize a little bit of compassion for someone else other than myself, if I can find a little bit of love in there for anyone in the universe, my wife, my kids, or anyone, I must admit that they were not here when I arrived. And that if they are there, then I believe what you have taught me, that the alcoholic, and I really believe this, and this is something you have given me, the privilege to believe, that the alcoholic is the kind of a person is put together in such a way that he knows that life is not worth living unless he has this inner kingdom. Now, prior to meeting you, the only way in the world that I know how to get spiritual was to do it this way. And I could get just as spiritual as you wanted to get. And you and Alcoholics Anonymous have taught me what the young man said many thousands of years ago. He said, seek first the kingdom and all things added. And isn't this what I've done all my life? I've sought first the inner kingdom. The only difference now I find out is that you have taught me, and thank God that it's true. Because every once in a while when I am not happy, every once in a while when I do not feel grateful, every once in a while when there seems to be absolutely no love in my heart, I can't walk up to one of you and tell you that it does not exist. I can tell you that there's something that I am not doing that's not allowing it to exist for me. That love and understanding and compassion are principles that can be applied like drugs or narcotics or alcohol if I will put them into my life today. And again, I say, this is a pretty tremendous experience. Because today, I look in my heart and I find I have things I never had before. Little things that were never there before. I can honestly say, like I'm talking to a friend of mine tonight, he says, when I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, he says, I was only about $500 in debt. Today, I'm about $30,000. I'm making profits. You know, I'm sure that there are more people in the room than myself who've either been on podiums or seen people on podiums get up and say they're grateful and have tears come to their eyes. And I think that it's best brought out why, I think, for myself. I feel so awfully grateful when I get with other alcoholics and I come to the full stark realization of what's really happening to me. It always reminds me again of a little story, which it seems to be the best way for me to understand it. And it seems that this story is about some people that got shipwrecked. And they happen to be out on a raft for almost 2 weeks. And they run out of water and they run out of everything. And they're just about to the point. It's a strange thing when a man knows he's going to leave the planet. He loses all of his sense of false pride. All kinds of strange things seem to happen. And these people were all talking just before they thought they were going to die, just what they would do with their life if they had another chance to live it again. And all of a sudden, just like a miracle, it seemed that a boat passed by and picked these people up. But in the meantime, on this boat had been out to sea about 2 weeks with all the other people. These people had run the gamut on shuffleboard and ping pong, and they They talked to everybody that was interesting to talk to, and life was getting to be just a dull. They were waiting to get to port so they could start living again. But about a week later, after these people had gotten well enough, they sat at the captain's table. And there was a look on these people's face that wasn't on anyone else's face on that whole ship, because these people had been given the chance to do with their lives what they would have done if they'd have had the right to have done it in the first place. And you know, it's a real privilege, again, to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I realize now that I'm given the opportunity to do one thing that I never had before. You told me I could never be a success at anything until I tried to be successful with me, that I could never imitate anyone as well as I could become myself. And you know, this is not an easy thing, because first of all, who the devil am I? I find out now that I am the sum total of all my past experiences. I'm the kind of a fellow that used to think that the guy who went to Main Street was surely the alcoholic. He was obviously the guy with the wine sores that drank the... But you know, some fellow that's still got a few degrees on the wall, I mean, he's a little bit alcoholic. This is the way I looked at it. And you know, I realize now that actually the hardest alcoholic there is in this whole universe is not the guy on Main Street who has given up everything for what he knows he must have, but the guy that used to be like me, who would walk both sides of the street, come home, show up on jobs, dying on the inside, but looking at these people saying, there's nothing wrong with me. This is the hard kind of alcoholism. I'm so tickled to death tonight that the vice that I had on my head for so many years that you folks call the obsession has been taken off. Because I find now that it's almost mentally impossible to think of anything constructive, healthy, spiritual, when a vice is on one's head. You people told me when I first came into Alcoholics Anonymous, you said, we can do nothing for you except take away the obsession to drink. And I'd like to say again tonight, my God, what else is there? To take the vice, the phonograph record that ran in my mind for so long, I've got to have another drink. I've got to have another drink. I've got to have another drink. I can honestly say that today, all day, that record, that vice, has not been there. And yet again, you told me that you could not give me your experiences. You could only relate them. That no one in Alcoholics Anonymous could get another person sober. And you told me that all the things that happened to me in my first month, my first year, or my first 10 years would be my own personal experience. And that I was guaranteed continued sobriety one day at a time if I didn't forget the last page of the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you told me to be sure to give freely of what I find. You told me the contingency for my sobriety is to never arrive, because I never forget a little sign I saw on a wall in a group down in East Los Angeles. It said, and I never forget this if I live to be 1,000, it said, sobriety is a journey and not a destination. And I like to think now, as I once read a little thing this Bill said, he says, after you've been around about 10 years, he said, if you're truthful and honest with yourself, he says, you'll recognize you just stuck your toe in the door of this beautiful way of life. And I honestly believe that I'm sticking my toe in the door, because now I've got a wife that's one of us. I've got children, I'm sure, that are one of us. I don't have the dog anymore, but I've got something I never had before. I've got people in all different parts of the country I can walk into, regardless whether they're Southerners, Northerners, Easterners, Westerners, or what they are. I can get off a plane, or they can get off a plane down there. They can walk up, and then they only have to say one thing. It's better than saying I'm the President of the United States. I think it's the grin that goes behind it. My name is so-and-so. I'm an alcoholic. It seems to be the key, the ticket, to almost unlimited happiness. I would again say it to you in sitting down. I would much rather stand before every person that's in this room tonight and tell you, I'm an alcoholic, and after I leave, have you, every one of you doubt it, than have me doubt it for a second. Then for me to go out of here and walk down the street, staggering the way I used to do, and have every one of you point at me and say, there he goes, he's an alcoholic, and me not know it. I would much rather spend the rest of my life, one day at a time, without alcohol, and be an alcoholic, than spend the rest of my life proving that I'm not. Thanks a lot.